This episode of AetherStream is brought to you by Aetherflow Media. We would not be able to create content like this without the support of our amazing patrons.
Welcome to AetherStream. To join me today, we have Croatoan, Enki, and I'm your random derp host, Tilp.
Okay, but we knew that already.
I know, but what they don't know is that we're now actually going to continue on with our 5.2 content.
Yeah, didn't we get distracted by Little Ladies Day and all that cute stuff? Like, I'm pretty sure we did. And then, the plague happened.
Yeah, the plague happened. By the way, you guys did awesome on the Little Ladies Day podcast.
Thank you.
It was a nice breather for me to not actually be on the podcast for once.
You're just like, nah, you guys can do that stuff on your own for once. I'm not going to be around to babysit you.
Yep.
It's just like, oh yeah, dad's out. Like, let's post all the memes. Let's trash talk everybody.
You know, it's not like I went and visit some random mansion that had like a secret laboratory in the basement with a random virus inside of it that started with a C. Oh, wait.
That sounds like an okay time to me.
Yeah. So, for one thing, everybody, please be safe out there. We know it's chaotic times. We do apologize for not publishing last week. Chaotic times. I mean, Enki was in the middle of her move.
Yep.
Dylan's in like middle of quarantine island.
Yeah, she's transitioning to work from home right now.
Yeah. And then Croatoan is just busy being our lore master. So, you know, kind of crying.
Making too many notes. Girl, 7 pages.
I can't. I don't know what to say. It just. I see something. I have to write about it. I write a lot about it, and then 7 pages later, I'm like, "What am I doing?" Like, it just.
You know how with the Jedi, they say, "Let the hate flow through you." No, you know, with the whole.
No, sin. Let the lore.
Let the lore flow through you, and then vomit it all over a page, and you're just like, "This is good. I love this."
Yeah, and so the funny part is, so actually, I had the opportunity to show this off, and Anonymous got to see it, and he was saying, he's like, you know what's really funny about this document? I'm like, what's that? He's like, you know, most of this might not even be the actual reason why it's in the game. And I'm like, but like at the same time,
but it's a compelling reason.
It's still compelling. It's still cool. And I'm that like the rule of cool, I'm attached to it because of that, despite it not even being the possible fact of why it's even a plot device. I'm like, like what is Final Fantasy? What is it doing to me? Like, I just,
okay. So I wasn't here for the last one, and you guys like did all this stuff without me because I was, what the hell was I doing? Oh wait, I had no internet because they stole it from me again because they're shitty. So where did we leave off? So you can give Homegirl like a bit of a head start on doing some mental gymnastics here.
Heard.
So, I mind if I take this real quick?
Of course.
So first off, we went and talked to Ralbon. Ralbon said, haha, I have one arm, but we're being attacked by a weapon. And then we took a nice little trip back to the first, to where we were greeted with our good old pal, the crystal arm. And then we came over here and we talked to these guys, found out our friend Arbert's body's walking around, and now we're just kind of looking around for him.
Yeah, that was shady. I don't like that. Like, yeah, Arbert's walking around, by the way, and I'm like, that is not possible. Excuse me, sis.
By the way, I don't know if I really need to mention this, but I'm going to anyways. This podcast does contain spoilers, so if you guys have not done the 5.2 content, help, we know you haven't done it. Please do so, and please support the official release.
Please tell me you've done the content.
Oh, I have done the content.
I was going to say, girl, I'm in the middle of moving, and even I've done some of the content. You have no excuse.
No, seriously, I have finished the content. I'm just rolling with you guys' memes and picking on me for not doing content.
Okay, well, you guys need to find something about me to pick up on like really, really soon, because Crow's got the whole Asian thing going on. Delphi's got the whole doesn't do content, and me, it's kind of just like, am I unmemeable? Am I unrelatable? Oh my god.
I think within time we shall find a...
What, find the weakness.
Idol of the convocation for you.
A river flows one drop at a time.
Oh my god, that's true though.
Nice.
No, actually, I've been dropping a lot of hints of stuff, and if some people actually pay attention, especially when I call it Emmett Selk, Emmett Smith, and the voice that I do it in, people should understand what I'm trying to go for. So if you can get it, please tag me on Twitter or AetherStream and just put the name of the person that I'm trying to imitate.
Also shade him.
Yes, also shade me. It's just be like, did you do your content?
How do you know this? You didn't do the content. Okay, so Abbott's walking around and I don't like that. Let's get back to that light.
So to get us caught up to the final part here, we actually just finished doing the puzzle and then we got our little brief into the where Crow will now take control of the thing because I forgot the lady's name. Kind of like the first Warrior of Light way back in the day, but not the Warrior of Light.
Like the sorceress?
Yeah, the sorceress.
So Tiuna was a Warrior of Light of the past, yeah. She was a member of the Vis during the Age of Ronka. And the reason why you know she's a Warrior of Light is because they depict that she received her powers from the Star Shower. And that's how you got your powers. So you make that connection via the mural. And so it was really awesome because, like I said, I think I mentioned in the last episode, Star Showers haven't really been relevant to the plot since ever. But they were very heavily featured in 1.0. And then you get that like single, maybe less than 5 minute cutscene of the Star Shower appearing in 2.0. And they never, ever bring it up again. So this scene, this was, I mean, there's a reason why they called this patch Echoes of a Fallen Star. Like Yoshida explained that this is supposed to be, you know, a nostalgia patch. This is supposed to be something that brings back stuff, you know, echoes of fallen stars. Mm-hmm. Star Showers. Like, it was, I don't know. It's fascinating. I love that they did that. Big throwback. No, this whole patch is a big throwback. Like, a lot of it is supposed to be.
So, one of the things that, because I remember the Falling Stars from back in 1.0 era, because they did have them then. What I didn't realize was, I just assumed that was a hint towards the Meteor Project. And then, you know, you get the same stars in the 2.0 release. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe we're going to do something with Bahamut then. We did do something with Bahamut, but clearly the ties did not connect in that straight line like I thought they did. I was wrong.
Okay, so to be fair to you, Till, the Meteor Project is actually one of the intended echoes of Yoshida wants you to think about. So you're on the right money with that, because we are in fact going to Bozja in a couple weeks. So that's part.
Plus the stuff that was hinted at in the Ruby stuff, which we won't be talking about in this podcast.
Because yeah. Yeah, I haven't done content. It.
Ruby weapon separate content. We'll get back to it, promise.
Yeah. You know, and then we had the Amarant, which, you know, it didn't occur to me until the last podcast, you know, oh yeah, I remember the Falling Stars, AKA the whole building and stuff falling apart. And then the stuff.
The end times, man.
The end times. You know, my thoughts were partially wrong, but yes, the Falling Stars and receiving powers.
And Oddbutt encouraging everyone to be like, hey, you should do what I used to do. Like, it's pretty cool, man. Like, you're all pretty cool people. I bet you could be like super cool Warriors of Light. And it's like, listen, like, those who ignore history are doomed to repeat it. That's my theory. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Who started the Flood? Just saying.
Oops.
Emmett Smith.
I mean, I guess technically it was his fault. I mean, technically.
There's a lot that happened that helped with the Flood. We got Eden, we got the Warriors of Light, we got the Shadow Keeper, we got the Asians. I mean, there was a lot going on that led to that point. It's hard to pin on one person. Like, I think it was meant to be a massive amount of singular pieces all leading to one solid piece. And unfortunately, the Warriors of Light get the hit because they were kind of like the cherry on top. But, right. I mean, the world was already leading to the brink of oblivion from the very beginning. Like, there was already actions being taken to get it to the point where it was ripe for destruction. Like, if anyone's ever done the fifth role quest, please, please, please do so. It's fantastic content. Wait,
there's a fifth one?
There's a fifth role quest.
Once you've done all of that.
What? Okay, so I guess I need to go level healer now to actually find out this information.
Yeah.
Well, okay, Tilp, you want to here's a quick cheat for everyone in the audience. If you really willing to get that fifth role quest, but you don't like healing, which that's not a bad thing. Not everyone's into the healing. Get summoner leveled. It'll get your scholar up, and then you get the automatic quest completion with that.
Yeah, oh wow! Cheat. I totally forgot that's, about that cheat.
Yeah, because that's how I got mentor.
That's how I got mentor. That's how I got and like. So it sounds as now bear with me here. It sounds like I'm taking advantage of the system, but you have to understand not everyone is comfortable with healing. So this is an opportunity for people that want those rewards without having to actually do healing stuff. And then if you choose to get the mentor crown, just don't teach people how to heal, you know, like, right. Cause you didn't, you know, you're not actively trying to be a mentor to teach healing. Like for me, I like teaching people how to tank, but I can't do that without the crown because people like the crown, but I can't get the crown without healing. So Summoner Scholar is the way to go. If you are just healing is meant for specific, it's a specific, very, very specific play style. So I'm never, ever against anyone that does want to do it. But if you're in it for the lore, like I am, if you're in it for various reasons, Scholar Summoner is the way to go, my opinion.
So from what I gathered out of all this information that you just told me is that I'm an assassin and I cheated on the system.
No! Ah!
Come hey, on! I'm an assassin and I game the system however I want. Woo!
Look, if I'm an assassin, I would have made the system, so...
You wouldn't even know. Fam. I question that sometimes.
But that is good information to know, because I completely spaced that, because back when they actually separated the class to where you didn't have to do the job, not the job, the class quests to unlock the jobs, I thought they kind of neutralized that somehow, but it didn't occur to me to check into it. And then now with you being like, by the way, if you just level up Summoner, and that's like, oh yeah, wait, they didn't fix that? Oh no.
It's going to be impossible to tear the two apart because they have the same route and they'd have to do a whole nother thing. And it's like, That's time they probably don't have right now when they're focusing on the future. So, makes sense. Yeah.
In reality, I have a level 35 scholar. Before, I mean, it was a level 30 astrologian.
Gives you something to do in quarantine, I guess.
Yes, as I sit there in purgatory of Summoner Hell.
Yeah, go level up your summoners during a quarantine.
Summoner has a really good story. Oof, I love Summoner lore. So
I know, plus you're... Yishtola's little sister. Is it her little sister or bigger sister?
I'm not sure the age difference.
Yeah.
But I know. But fun fact, she's one of 12. So there's 12. Oh,
that's a lot of 12. Them.
Yishtola has 11 sisters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So for all you Yishtola fan boys and girls out there, she's got sisters.
Hopefully that better than she is. Okay, back to the thing at hand. We getting off on the tangent. We haven't even gone past the first paragraph, ladies.
So we kind of just
5.2. It has a lot of content.
Oh, trust me, I tried jumping in the last podcast, and Crow's like, "Yeah, you kind of jumped again." Nope, no, still jumping.
I don't ever want to make it look like I'm a bad person doing that. I just want to help. You know, like I'm like. Because the way it flows a certain way, you know, the patch flows a certain way, and like skipping certain parts misses out on the reason why that part happened. So it's like, I don't know. I'm like, ah, wait, like I jump in. I'm like, let me strong arm this real quick.
And then it's like a cycle. Crow tries to strong arm us back into like making sure that we stay on track. And then we have to like put the reins on him and say, no, don't get too deep. Don't go too deep into the lore. No lore. Deep end. Yeah.
It's crazy. This game's got a lot of stuff. So
so after we get the enlightenment, we kind of go back to Slytherborn and we chat with our lovely Rogarth. No, sorry. That's in the source.
Ronzo. Oh god.
Ronzo. I was about to call him Galka.
Oh wow. Wow.
Oh my shit.
All right. Crotoid, here, take the wheel. I'm driving us into more trees.
I didn't like this bit because, like, I felt for Runa. Like, I heard. Okay, so I heard. Sad.
See, and the worst part is, y'all made me rewatch it a couple times as I was writing the script. Okay, like as I was writing out the idea for this episode, I rewatched this entire scene, and it hurt doubly so because I had a fresh eyes on it, like fresh awareness of what was going on. Runar has been asking us to eat stew with him since the original MSQ, since
and we keep July, not.
And we keep denying him the opportunity to try his food. And it's the meanest thing you could ever do to a person is deny their cooking. And we haven't, it's not like, ah. And so we finally, he insists, like he actually yells, please stay so you can try his stew. And what are you going to do? Sit there, help Yishtola clean her room so she can leave.
Yeah, what the hell is that?
And he overhears the discussion. Ah, why do we hate this poor Ronzo so much? To cause
I get, I get that they wanted to shoehorn in that Master Matoya reference. I get it. Yeah. But did we need that? Could we not have just had stew? Essie, please, let me eat. Like, you let the Crystal Exarch bring me sandwiches. Why will you not let Runar bring me stew? Like, for real.
Yeah, like he he's the biggest friend in that entire area. Like, we weren't even gonna make, like, 5 feet into the blind forest before we got shot at. Runar ain't trying to shoot us. Runar was like, have some food. And what do? Nah. Like,
he welcomes us, and we treat him like utter nice crap.
Character. And we have been ruining his life since we walked into that forest.
And Ystal is kind of ruining it too, because it's obvious how he feels about her.
She's not very, so I don't know if she's not aware or she's choosing to ignore it. It's really hard to tell at this point. There's a little section in MSQ where it looks like she's aware that he's feeling a certain way, but he kindly doesn't even make it a point of the problem. He's just like, I'm just tired is all. Poor guy hides his feelings so you don't feel worried about him. And then right before, then you once again ditch him in the middle of dinner to go deal with the ongoing problem with Ardbert, and he's like, all he can say, like, he wants to say something, he yells her name and then goes, be safe, and you're like,
tell her how you really feel, dude.
So much he wants to say, and he can't. Like, he's so worried about the result of being open with his feelings, and it's the worst thing to watch. It's like, I don't know, it's like watching a person on training wheels for the first time. But yeah, it's their emotions. It's this bike is his emotions, and he keeps falling, and I'm like,
he's like, I really love you, and I want to tell you that, but, and we're just like, we Kanye the poor guy. Like,
yeah, cut him off every time.
I know you love your Stola, but let me go and kill this Sin Eater first.
I know, let me take her away from you every time you get a chance to talk to her. Like,
man. And then Ardbert shows up and makes it even, well, not Ardbert, obviously not Ardbert, not hashtag not my Ardbert. Like, he shows up and makes it even, he throws salt in the wound, because knowing that you've just had to, like, you have not been a good wingman to Runar, like, you've literally taken his boo away from him so he can't talk to her. And now, like, Elidibus shows up and he acts like a shady cow, you know? He's like, oh, you
that scene was hilarious. Croto was there?
Hold up.
Crow be giving them shade.
Only because they thought to tell me that they would remember my people. How dare they think that they can just remember my people when they can't even remember the last 100 years? How dare they? No, so yeah,
that is, I mean, true. I understand his sentiment. I do. that was not a very mature way to put it, considering he's thousands of years old. He sounds like a petulant drama queen a little bit. True. Like, Em itself was a true drama queen, but
the melodrama,
the melodrama was great. He was all like, oh, like, waving his hands around, like he would have made a great drag queen.
I'm gonna take a nap. An Astian 10,000 years old wants to take a nap. Like, that still kills me to this day. He's like, and you've made the cardinal sin of boring me. I retire to the shade. Like, that. Right. Those lines are so good. I love good. Him.
just Elidibus is just so nasty about it. He's so mean. And I get that he's bitter. I get why he's bitter. He's had thousands of years to harbor that resentment. And yeah, maybe we do deserve it a little bit for being presumptuous. But at the same time, like, reel it in, dude. The world's changing. You should maybe change with it. Get with the program.
Yeah, Grandpappy.
Right, old man. Okay, Boomer. Yeah.
I think, and honestly, so without trying, I don't want to get too deep into this, but it's such an interesting prospect of the Amaritine dilemma. It takes a few hashtag searches in Twitter to kind of see how many people really are on trying to consider the side of the Amaritines over our own. And it's, you know, seeing a lot of them not wanting to adapt to the current situation, you know, adapt to the fact they no longer are the ruling powers. It seems sensible, but at the same time, they lost so much. They lost so much, and it was all just out of nowhere. Like, they didn't none of it was planned.
Right.
Some loud sound. Yeah. Some loud sound started issuing forth from the planet. And all of a sudden you're seeing everyone you ever knew ever die in front of you for the first time. Like, I mean, it's just, it's insane.
It's just crazy.
And they had to, so they're trying to save everything. So the only thing they can think about is, let me summon a god to actually put the planet in check. They do so, but the planet, like, that god required their life. So more people die just to get this god alive. And then the planet is dead. The planet is in control, but now it's dead. So they have to sacrifice even more people to bring life to the planet. So they're down to the original survivors of this incident are down to literally 1/4 of their full number. And then now they have to deal with just that emptiness. And they're like, well, if we let things go, we can try to bring it back.
Right. And they've been through it.
So it's so interesting that this narrative has allowed us the opportunity to not see black and white. That's the big deal here. It's just, it's not a matter of, oh, they need to get over it. Or, you know what I mean? It's like, but should they? What would you do if you were in their circumstances?
Right.
And then you're like, oh, Pope, you know, then you're stuck in that mind. And then it just, I mean, it's this endless repository for creative material. I mean, the art that's been coming from these ideas, the stories have been coming from ideas, which to note, and this is kind of a little side topic here. I actually participated in an Amaratine themed magazine that should be coming out shortly. So look forward to that.
I wrote on Twitter.
Really good stuff. I've been seeing a lot of the production behind it, and people have been doing really, really good jobs. So that's going to be awesome design to look forward to. Anyways.
Okay, so what was next? Okay, so he gives us that ultimatum, and he's really shady, and he kind of gives us, like, he puts us through the ringer, to be honest. He's not very nice about it. So this is the part where we go do... Oh, no, this isn't the part where we go do the dungeon just yet. Like, we have to go and find out more about what is up with Elidibus. Like, what is his deal?
Yeah, we try to ask him, and he's just like, nah. Bye. Like, yeah, he doesn't want...
Girl, bye. I don't gotta tell you nothing.
Well, and that's the thing. That's what kills it, because it's like, we thought that we were so close to the true story, because Emmett Selk was so kind to us. But even Elidibus, like, laments him. He's like, man, I didn't think Emmett Selk would mess up this bad.
Why he shades Emmett, and I'm like, yeah, ooh, that's not okay.
And you're like, okay, so we're not good? Like, you're like, wait, we're not friends now? Like, I thought we were getting somewhere. No, that was one person. One person decided to be friends, not the Asians. So it's like, oh, great. Now you're back into complete darkness. And so it's recommended that you go find answers. You know, you need to find answers on your enemies. You need to figure out. You're back at square one. With Elidibus slamming the door in your face, you don't have any answers. So you got to find them on your own. Mm-hmm.
I'm way better than Amarot or fake Amarot.
Well, and that's Amarot. The thing. Yeah, you
it's
have
just
to.
A model.
That was a phantom creation. It had answers, but at a different level. And so you need to go deeper, and it's suggested you go speak to the Ondo, because the Ondo live in the ruins of Amarant, the actual ruins of Amarant, not the fictional creation. And so you follow through with that plan, go to the Tempest. There's a little quick side plot where you had to help them recover their food.
You like livers. I couldn't find that bag for love nor money for about five minutes. I was like, where is it?
I did find the shoe bill. That's where you find the shoe bill, by the way.
Found that guy. Found him.
which now that Reen knows that he's a thing, it's like, okay, someone needs to answer that question.
Explain the shoe
Who's
bill.
Who's the shoe bill? Like, and there's an interview where Ishikawa alludes to the shoe bill actually being someone possibly important. So it's like,
During the whole MSQ for 5.0, it sat there and watched us. It stared at us as we were staring at it.
It's like, okay, so who is you? New phone, who dis?
Exactly. But it's like,
so.
I will admit I had trouble finding that as well.
Oh yeah, no, me too.
And it's really tough back there. It's like, please, I'm being attacked by a million and one things and I'm being eaten alive.
Well, thankfully there was people that were killing everything.
Oh yeah. So I good job community, Final Fantasy community, for doing that. That was a really neat thing to see people cooperate and kill the entire nest before people were doing MSQ.
It was the same with the what is it? The Evil East raids. You remember the pink chocobos?
I tried.
People were standing by to heal people and res them.
I tried to tank like four birds once to help people. That was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Those things hit so hard. They actually had to nerf them, by the way. I don't know if you saw it in the patch notes. The birds got nerfed.
Yeah.
So that's funny.
Justly.
But yeah, I was tanking that for people as best as I could, and I kept getting my butt whooped. So I was like, well, I'm doing my best. I feel like I did my part. I got someone's clear, at least, you know. Yeah, no, that was good on the community for working together on that. That was a really nice thing to
see. Kudos to you guys.
I appreciate people who go out of their way to help clear monsters out of quest-based zones.
What is not cool, what was not cool to me and kind of made me feel very, very like a sense of foreboding almost, was the fact that Thancred tells us, you know, after we pick everything up and after we've helped them, like, oh yeah, by the way, like there's people food here. Like service people.
Oh yeah.
They've been stealing stuff from everyone. And it's like, what is this? Okay? Like, why are you doing this? Why are you like this?
Yeah, that was a really interesting development there. Cause you know, and then you question the chief and you're like, what's going on? Like, why are they stealing all this food? And you come to find out it's a declaration of war. The Benthos want to raid the surface world. They are actively planning to do so. And so you're like, oh, come on. Like, and obvious nostalgia moment here, because once again we're going back to one of those echoes that Yoshida brought up. You're thinking about Limsa Lominsa, which right. The way it works is that in Limsa Lominsa they're in the wake of that invasion. The Sahagin are on the surface because they've already achieved their initial rise up via Leviathan, and so that's why like a whole portion of that area is like water aspected, because they've taken over that place. They're trying to turn the entire Lominsan shore, they're trying to turn that entire thing into what the Sapsa spawning grounds looks like.
Into a spawning grounds.
They want that whole spot. So that's active fight. That's an active war right now, as we speak, right? But this hasn't happened on the first yet, because no one has had the impetus or the motivation to push towards that direction until you drop the big old bubble of air in the ocean. Because you did that, it messed up the balance. It honestly did. The thing is, and this is where it comes into that whole concept of not black and white, right? The justification the Saiyans make is that they were trying to save your life, but they still ruined someone else's in the process,
right?
And now they have to accept the circumstances. The consequences of their action of dropping a bubble of air in the sea is the fact that an entire tribe of Ondo want to kill everyone on the surface, blaming them.
We're doing what we do best, upsetting the locals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, the usual, and it's so. This is the funny part. Come to think of it, this is the funny part. What did we always do in Eorzea? Run into some random place, mess with the beast tribes, kill their god, and leave. Right? Like that's been the repeated like system for ages now. Right? We just ruin civilization as we walk, and it's one of those weird exchanges of being the hero. You know, some people don't see you as a hero literally because you're ruining their life.
Yeah, you know how I said earlier, like those who ignore history are doomed to repeat it. Yeah, we kind of keep doing.
Yeah, we're in that point. We are essentially driving the Benthos to the shore. We are the reason why the Benthos are stealing food. And my so, bad. You know, you're like, oh man. So now essentially this dungeon that comes up is a combination of both the goal to find more answers on the Asians and solve the problem that you made about the Benthos. Because so you're like, you even the Saiyans even talk about it. They're like, well, we need to figure this out, but we don't have time. We need to figure out stuff about Elidibus.
We need to do both. We have to do both.
Or figure out something. And the chief actually says, interesting. So this is the part that gets really interesting for me. The Ondo believe that they found the ruins by the will of the ancients. They believe that you appear to them by the will of the ancients, right? To them, the Asians are gods. They see the original people of Amarant as their deities. And so they say, look, it's another one of those momentous occasions. And you're like, why do you say that? Because the queen of the Benthos is in the ruins you need to go to find answers about Elidibus. And it's like, wow, that's not the coincidence, right? And then everyone's trying to figure it out for themselves. Ishtola is like, nah, that ain't the will of the ancients. And then the chief is like, doesn't matter if you believe it or not, it's still a thing. And it's like, ooh.
I just wanted to turn around to them and say, okay, hey, by the way, it's not by their will. We are literally stalking them right now.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just, it's funny because it's like, you have a different perspective. Like, by playing this game, you're gaining a perspective on the world's circumstances, but there are people who develop different circumstances based on the same events. The Ondo believe the ancients to be gods. You're currently fighting one right now. It's just, you know what I mean? Like, it's curious how everything looks different from a different perspective.
Out of all of those exchanges, I think Reen's was the best because she's just excited. It's like, oh, you
I was about to shoot
thank you, thank you yeah. for injecting positivity. Like, she's Reen's
I know,
excited.
She's like, I swear, Sawbird. You're like, you're just laughing at her because she's off topic, but at the same time, it's just really funny. But, so yeah, this is how you end up getting the dungeon knowledge. But you realize that because it's in deep Amarant, because it's actually beyond the bubble of Bismarck, you have to go rely on Bismarck again. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously making more problems by expanding the air bubble under the water as if we didn't learn already. And but
you gotta give him a scrubbing. We gotta give him a scrub, give him a bath. I mean, he's sitting in the water, but we gotta give him a scrub, get them barnacles off.
We did miss something before that I would love to talk about. Telling the old men to take a break. That was funny. I was not expecting it. And the sheer just like betrayal and anger from those two men.
Oh, yeah. When he tries to water walk.
He tries to water walk, falls in because he's tired. And then Reen is like, Reen literally begs you to take a break. She does that new, it's a new emote because it's not an emote we have as characters. And I've seen it frequently used in Shadowbringers content. She like pulls her hands in. She's looking at you with puppy dog eyes. Please take a break. Oh, that
it's
hurts
very
so
unique
bad.
To her. I thought that their tiredness was in reference to the fact that they'd been on the first the longest, which means they're tuckering out and their condition is worsening. That's what I thought.
And it's also, I think Guryanjay specifically, he's been helping research the spirit vessel. He's been spending all his waking moments on trying to figure out a way to get back home. And you find out that it's making them so tired that somehow the crystal XR confuses a fish for a knife. It's
oh my god, yeah, like please,
so
old
it's,
man.
It's chill. Wearing them. It's wearing the old men out. Like all of them are pushing themselves to the very brink of exhaustion to find an answer. And Reen is terrified for them because she's like, "Look, it's not worth literally driving yourself to non-existence."
Small baby says, "Take a break."
Small baby takes a break, or tells you to take a break, and you, I mean, can you say no? Like, you,
can we
you
really
look in those eyes? They zoom in the camera to that scene of her being with her puppy dog.
Very comedic.
You can't
like
fight
your old dads to this child, and you need to listen to your children when they tell you
she
to
makes
calm
you,
down.
She makes you go take a break. And so, three of you go to hang out at the shore of Sullen. Nice little, bonding moment where you guys talk about the shore and fishing. I mean, I'm a little sad you didn't actually get the fish because I think that would have been biggest bromant of the patch. But I guess the thought, that's what counts, you know. Thankrid
really
offered
is.
To fish with you, so that's, I mean, he thinks you're really cool enough to fish with. So
it depends on whether or not we want to spend time with Thancred, though.
I know. Yeah. I mean, he's at the hardest point because his corporeal ether is the weakest right now. So like he will be the first to be cut off. That's the biggest worry, and the fact he's managing such a cool, you know, mood about it is surprisingly well.
His mood is better than it was. He's less of an emo boy.
But his big worry is just making sure Reen is at a good place so he can leave her and not feel guilty. He does not want to leave her like he, because here's the true fact. He's still, I mean, he got closure with Minfilia, but I guarantee you he still hurts when he thinks about it, because he wasn't
like that.
Yeah, he wasn't always there for Minfilia when he wanted to be. He tried his best, but like you read his stories, he's got two. He's got two stories where he tried to be there for Minfilia and it just didn't work the way he wanted it to. And he might be feeling it's kind of his fault that she decided to go to the first, you know, that she decided to give her body up to Heidelin. He might be feeling that's all his fault, that he could have helped prevent that. And he sees Rhene as tiny Minfilia as a second chance. And it's like, I can't mess up with her. You know, like, I can't do this times two. I have to do everything I can to make sure she is in a good spot. So when I go back home, she'll take over as the hero of the world. You know, like, that's what she wants. That's what he wants.
He's a semi-responsible parent.
And yeah, semi-responsible. Like, he's got a lot of pressure, and he's managing to hold it very well. Being able to talk about fishing in the meantime. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
I remember this bit, like, while you're sitting down and everything, and you're kind of, you're having that great bonding moment and, you know, the forced bonding moment. Like, don't you hear, like, I think this is the part where you meet up with those two guys from earlier on, like those two lovable buggers, like the guardsmen, I think they were.
Yeah.
So yeah, we don't get to sit down and rest for quite as long as Rhene would maybe have wanted, but what she doesn't know won't hurt her, I guess.
Yeah, you don't tell her. She questions you. She questions you. She's like, you sure was that? That was really quick for a rest. And you have to, like, Thancred's like, tell her we were resting. Do it. Like,
please, I mean, tell her, or otherwise we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, please validate me. Because my daughter will not let me rest.
My daughter,
like,
will never speak to me again.
She'll get very mad if I tell her that we literally sat for maybe 5 minutes. Like, so I don't know. I like that interaction. I think that was really cool. Additional story development for each of the Scions. Additional story development for Rhene. It's a nice opportunity to see them be more so human. Despite the chaos that's going around you, despite the uncertainty, they still have opportunities to be people. So I like that portion. And then, of course, you know, the whole, I mean, then that's when you get to the whole Barnacles thing. You talk to Bismarck. He says, hey, I don't mind, but I'm itchy. Once again, something we caused, because he's never moved from that spot. So all of a sudden, Barnacles on his body. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we get to take him. He offers to give us a ride to Amnesis.
He Ubers us.
Actually, I think what it was because we actually got him to fly and he moved. It wasn't the fact that he gained the barnacles. It's just he noticed them after that. And he's like, yeah, if I'm going to do that again, I need to get these taken care of.
I don't want people to see me like this. God,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to call me Ratchet.
Oh, jeez. Thousands of years and I gained a couple extra hitchhikers.
Thousands of years. I don't want to go out like this.
Bismarck
telling us to tell him he looks pretty.
So we pop over to Colusia after we finally get the barnacles off and we all agree, and he takes his little extra nap that he wants. I don't know if that's how it goes. Anyways,
He has to clear his body. Like, the thing is, the whale. Speaking of man,
the
math, real fast,
the myth, the whale.
Real fast, while I remember, there's a little small portion where they describe the reason why he's called the Isle of Ken, and it was cute, and it made me cry. There you go. Aww. But I don't know if you remember that part. It was like, he explained who Ken was. Yeah, the friend who lived on his back. Like, that was emotional. The fact that he went to sleep after his friend died and didn't wake up until you woke him up, that's a big deal. Like, yeah. I felt that.
I'm okay with that. Like, this is definitely better than the comfort, or the island comfort-eating Bismarck from Heavenswood.
The Vanu Vanu version wanted to destroy you, but this guy's a nice friend, so I'll take this one over the other any day.
Also, I like the fact that you get to do the first part of the dungeon on his back, and you get to sit.
That was awesome.
You get to get a little ride.
Final Fantasy design team, thank you so much for doing what you can to change up the dungeon narrative, because that's cool. Like, there's a lot of dungeons that kind of just, they always start at you already at the gateway or having walked in, you know, like there's always that little cutscene where you're opening the door and walking in and that sort of stuff. This was new.
We got a roller coaster section.
We literally are in motion underwater being attacked by things in the water. And then he slams himself into the rock and then is like, hey, we found it. Ha! Drops the bubble of air. And you get that was a cool dungeon opening. But yeah. Can I say something real fast about that I will not ever, I'm not going to get over it. I don't know if I'll be able to.
Yeah.
What's okay. Up?
The mob enemies are from Eureka. And I don't know why they did that. And I don't like it.
Oh, I noticed that.
You're right.
They're all from Eureka, except like two monsters. The rest of them are Eurekans. And I'm like, what are you doing here? Stay away from me. I didn't spend so many hours in that con. Yeah, like.
I don't know. Now that you've said it, I can't unsee it. And I will just avoid that dungeon like the plague. I don't feel that way.
I did the research on it, right? I prepared that document and everything. And the names are exactly the same, except for the jellyfish thing has a different name. But it's exact same form, exact same shape, and the same spells, okay? So you can't tell me I'm being, throwing my tin hat on here, and can't tell me I'm being a crazy conspiracy theorist, because there's some reason why they used Eurekan enemies. They have to, especially the ones that were created. That's the thing. It's not a concept of, it's just the native wildlife. They use the actual primals. Fubao is a severed off portion of absolute virtue. Why is it in the first? I need to know.
It seems like a whole thing with like the Isle of Val or their Isle of Val, their version of it either staying sunk or like sinking or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean there's so many ways to explain the reason why. I just feel like there is one. We just don't know. And considering the concept of Eureka being involved, absolute virtue being involved, that kind of stuff, while we're going to Anamnesis, that really messed with me. Because I was like, I know this is supposed to be, quote, Ascian official residence. Why are Eureka monsters attacking us? I don't like it. So that whole segment had me screaming. Like, I was doing the trust, right? When I first came up, I was doing trust, and I was screaming at the monsters. I'm like, hey, why are you here?
Go home.
I just, look, if anyone's had the opportunity to read Aetherflow Media's recent issues, I wrote a two-part article on Eureka. I don't ever want to talk about it again. You know what I mean? Like, I just put so much work into that content, and seeing them again was like, I don't know, my chest tore. Like, I was like,
I didn't sign up for this again, I swear.
I know, it was crazy. But the whale back ride is fun. I love that part. That was a really cool opening. Really enjoyed it.
I feel like the whole dungeon is fun as a whole.
Oh, everything about it is great. The music, though. You want to talk about the music?
Smooth jazz.
A little bit? Why are the ancients always depicted with smooth jazz? What crazy wild hair did appeared on Soken's head while he was making this music eating, because remember he's got his bucket of chicken. Okay, he's told us when he's inspired he grabs a bucket full of chicken, locks himself in the studio and just composes until he's done.
What? With a bucket of chicken and music.
Yeah, I don't know if you know that. Yeah, that's how he makes music. If he's inspired, he buys a bucket full of chicken, locks himself in the studio and just makes that music until he's done. So
you inspire artists out there. Get a bucket of KFC chicken
and lock yourself in your room. You'll be surprised.
Hashtag
what
not
happened.
Sponsored.
Is that what you do when you write articles? Do you grab a bucket of chicken and hide yourself away?
I get myself a specific drink. I make a very specific drink. I get some water. I lock myself in my. I have a little closet, clothis. They call it. It's an actual word. It's a clothis, and I lock myself in this room with some really good music, and boom, I'm just writing for several hours before I realize time has passed. So I can see
it's not a bucket of chicken. It's not a bucket of chicken. It's still iconic.
It's like metal music, but you know, everybody's got their own. No, seriously, like the heavier the guitar, the better I am at writing. It's strange. I don't know what it is. I love it. But
okay, so the thing with this dungeon, like here, like I literally did this a few days ago for Expert Roulette.
Oh, okay.
And nice. I'm spacing on it. Like, help me, please. Like, there's been so much going on in my life. that I've actually forgotten which order the bosses go in and what happens in between. Like, my brain keeps bringing up the dungeon that we got last patch. It keeps bringing up the Grand Cosmos, and I'm like, that's not what we're on.
Yeah, that's definitely not what we're doing.
My brain has spaced on it. Help me. Like, what do we do? Where do we go? I know. I remember the whale ride. Love that bit. But then everything after that is just some kind of weird blur.
Well, so you land in Amnesis proper, right? You're in kind of like in the courtyards. Now, to note, Anamnesis is a Grecian word that means remembrance or recollection. And it's
you talked about this in our patch notes talk, didn't you?
Yeah. I think I did a lot of... So, as part of that article that I wrote, the big thing is that amnesis refers to a philosophical principle. So there's actually a lot of content that refers to the word. The idea is specifically recollection of a past life, right? And so it's really telling because we've been trying to figure out for months now what our connection is to the convocation. And being told we're about to go to a place that has the name of recollection of a past life. I mean, it's like, they're just feeding us at this point. And so everything about the place is interesting. You can actually see that this used to be a place people lived. This was a place that people visited. And it's like the ruins of said place. So if you look really closely, now I would recommend doing this during trust and not during a roulette because a lot of people won't
wait.
People
don't let you look at the documents.
They won't let you. Yeah, they won't let you look at the scenario, the setting. But if you look really closely at the setting, it's very well designed to depict something that was there and was used very well, but no one even remembers why. And so it's really cool that they did that. Plus, you land and you have to fight the first boss immediately. So that part's really cool because you fight the unknown. And for anyone that doesn't have the context, the unknown is actually an enemy from Final Fantasy V.
Yep.
Which they reused in 7, I think, and a couple others. But it's specifically tied to a water area, like a deep sea area. So that was a really interesting throwback. Plus, try not to get too deep into this. The unknown looks like something that you encountered in Amarot, the actual dungeon Amarot. So that was a big scare because that thing was, I mean, you can call it cute if you want, but it had like 10 eyes. So I'm not into that. Like,
I need to Google it real quick.
Yeah, the unknown was pretty unknown. That's all.
What was that, Enki?
I need to Google it real quick so I can actually. I've spaced pretty bad.
You need to Google it real quick. Okay.
Oh god, it's the one with the arrows and the you need to reposition yourself in the AoEs. Oh god, yes. Oh, it was terrible the first time I did that because I was like, how does this mechanic work? I was like, wow, I'm dead and I'm the healer and this is terrible and my group hates me. No comms for me.
Jeez. Don't get me wrong. First time I saw it, I thought of a very deformed Godzilla.
Right, though?
Yep.
They are slightly terrifying looking because they're kind of, they look kind of rotten almost. But
yep.
I guess it's an undersea creature and they tend to look a little gnarly anyway. But this guy, I'm getting like anglerfish, like vibes from this thing.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely supposed to be reminiscent of something from the deep sea. Or, you know, and that's the thing, because it's either deep sea or it's like connecting to the nightmares, the terminus. So you're like, ugh, what are you? I'm scared either way.
Yeah, it's like, got all those eyes on its back. It's like, ugh, no thank you. Don't like that. Then, no, sorry,
and
man.
And then one of it's the buff when you kill one, the other one gets a buff called plain weirdness. And I'm just like, oh, really? I'm like, nice.
Okay. I'm glad I looked up that picture because now I will have nightmares for weeks. Is this why my brain scrubbed it? Probably why.
Here's the thing. Now I'm gonna try to make this tiny because, like I said, I'm gonna go off the rails every single point of this dungeon. But to
shrink ray it.
I'm gonna shrink ray this. Yes. Anything usually referring to concepts of the deep ocean or just the deep in general or depths tend to draw upon the concepts of like like horror and madness, because you're drawing upon a principle that not a lot of people understand. When you're like, there's an actual fear of deep water, like the deep ocean, like, but not the fear of the deep ocean so much as this, what is under the water.
H.P. Lovecraft understood.
Precisely. So you just quoted the reason why the unknown is a Lovecraftian reference, because Lovecraft loved to talk about underwater stuff. Things, Cthulhu, all that stuff.
Yeah, he's sleeping, taking a nap.
Yeah, they slept under the water. Why did he use the underwater? Because it's an actual genuine fear that can hold people for a very long time trying to figure out what's under the water. Because we really,
yeah, same as
shit, we don't know. We don't know stuff. Yeah, we don't know stuff about our oceans, right? Like, we actually know more about space than we do our own oceans on this planet. We don't have access.
What do humans do with the unknown? They panic about it.
And they panic and then turn it into 10-eyed dinosaurs. Yeah.
Right.
But that's the thing. I think it was an on purpose technique, like narrative technique, using the Lovecraftian principle of deep water. Like, it just, anything referring to depth or deepness will always draw upon horror themes, because it just, it doesn't make sense. We don't know.
We just don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, so the Benthos are, like, focused on that concept, you know, because, I mean, you attack them, you have to fight them, and they're all screaming about the demon wants your head and all that stuff. And it's just, it's all this weird culty kind of stuff, like, it's really, like, weird.
This is Innsmouth all over again, damn it.
It really is, though. It really is Innsmouth. Like, it was fascinating that they were drawing those references, because, I mean, everything about that place is freaky, but on purpose. You know, while you're still
trying Lovecraftian lore, so I was like, hey, I see you. I see what you're doing here. I'm picking up what
you're
doing. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you for catching on. I love, that's what I was trying to shrink away that. I wanted to shrink away Lovecraft into a piece that could be easily said without taking 20 minutes. But
right.
Lovecraft is hard to talk about in 20 minutes, so.
Yeah, he is a whole box of monkeys.
Like, yeah, I wrote an essay about him. My one of my final essays in school was about a Lovecraft story, so trust me. I had enough content to get an A, so.
Again, stuff's a blur in between the first boss and the stuff after that.
Well, like, that's the thing. You just fight the Benthos. You fight random mobs, but specifically like the Squib, which is also Eurekan, and I didn't like that. It was like they were enforcing the reference. I hated it. The Squib's the first enemy you meet in Eureka, so I'm like, huh. And then the Cleonid is horrifying. It's cute. It's got a cute little baby face, and then there's like tentacles from the top of its head that reach down and eat things, and it actually grows in size. The more enemies. So I actually have a fun, quick story. When I first entered Tempest, I got attacked by a Cleonid, right? And it was the first time I was in an area, didn't know what it was. I was like, oh, look at that cute face, right? And then I saw it eating monsters next to it. I didn't realize that's what it was doing. And every time it ate something, it would grow in size. And I didn't know what was going on. But by the time I ate four of those leeches, I died. I was one shot by the Cleonid.
So what you're saying is this is satanic Kirby.
It's Yeah. So, I mean, Innsmouth. It's literally Lovecraftian all around when it comes to these enemies, because, I mean, like Uncanny Valley, check, you know? And then you're dealing with the Benthos, who are all culty, you know, attacking you with their whole, the demon wants your head, all of you shall die. They're chanting this, right? So it's freaky. You know, you're being unsettled all around going through this entire area. And the first boss after that, so this would be the second boss.
Oh, is this the Minotaur looking guy?
Yeah, the Kyclops. Okay, so here's the thing.
Kyclops.
I did some crazy research on it. The reason why they use K is because that's how you transliterate Kappa into English. But the Latin version of that same word took Kappa and transliterated it into a C. So that's why they're both technically right, Cyclops and Kyclops. It's just two different kinds of transliteration.
Right.
I love language. So when I got into that, I was stuck on that for a while. But another fun fact is that immediate design is actually pulled from Final Fantasy Tactics. That is it's one of the espers from Tactics, one of the summons you can make.
They are doing a lot of throwbacks. They are. Yeah, it's nice because there's going to be some that people get, some people don't get, and some that people will want to get, so they go and play the other games.
I didn't know it was a tactics reference. Someone else made that reference for me. And when I read that, I was like, really? And I looked at the link and then I was like, oh, you're right. And so I ended up learning about it from someone else who was a bigger tactics fan than I am. So I thought that was really cool. But yeah, you end up fighting that thing.
Yeah, this boss took me a couple of tries as well. Like the floor mechanic. Like, I know it's really
tricks
basic.
You a bit. It tricks
it
you, though.
It tricks you.
Because it drops AoEs that you have to leave from and then go back to the spot. Yeah, you have to in and out. Because if you don't in and out, then you get hit by the mechanic that he placed beforehand, which were the swords and hammers. So I don't blame anyone that gets hit by it at least once or twice, because I think it's meant to be like confusing. And sometimes if you're like tunnel vision, you will get hit. Like,
yeah, it's tough the first time around, or it was for me anyway. Tough for the second time around too. And occasionally I do still die because, well, I done goofed, you know, and usually I'm playing the healer, so it doesn't really work out too well for me.
Yeah. I will say, with all of my Dragoon experience, I died a lot to the hammers. Gotta tank those floors, guys.
Jumpy boy tanks floor once more. I do like that they were changing the mechanics up, though. I did notice that with the first boss and, you know, the second boss with all the different tiles and everything and the very quick in and out and you relying on you being very reactive. Like, I enjoyed that. It keeps people, especially veteran players, on their toes, and new players alike. It's introducing them to new stuff that they haven't necessarily seen before.
Right. And then on top of that, the final boss of the dungeon, that was a unique mechanic I did not expect.
Oh, Lord, the hands. Like, they throw in hands like there's no tomorrow. I'm like, well, I'm just going to die then, I guess. Guess I'll die.
And it's just like, wow, that, I did not see that one coming.
That happened. It takes you a little bit to get the order that the hands, because it's like they come from one direction first, then they go from another, and the second time around you have to run forward and back, and it's like, oh, I thought we left this behind in Heavenswood.
Right.
Lots of stretch out the legs and stuff.
Intense Mother Hydra vibes from the boss. I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah. And then the one thing that kind of took me off guard, it's after the dungeon, not in the dungeon, is like we're battling in that room that is technically, I would say like a holographic video projection room.
Like a memory storage thing.
Yeah.
Amnonesis is a storage facility. Its original design for Amarat was to serve as the place where concepts would be, like, just like a big old fridge, you know, like anyone that ever created ever would seal their creation in a crystal, and that crystal would be put in Amnonesis. Now, whenever they had to recover those crystals for continuous research, or if they needed that concept for a further creation, then they would borrow those crystals and then build it into a new creation, which would then get crystallized and put back in the Amnonesis.
Oh, so they're putting things in the fridge and then taking them out. So I guess they have no expiry dates then. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Look, and that's the thing. There's no dates because the Benthos were using those creations to fight you. And there's an actual, I'm not going to lie, I did this on purpose out of curiosity. I let the spells cast. So the crystals break to kind of see what would come out of it. And it's really telling that some of the mobs that came out of those crystals were just eyes. Because that goes to tell you that these were parts of a bigger whole. These crystals were borrowed by other creators to make even bigger concepts. Like they explained in the original MSQ that the Amaratrines worked together. If you couldn't create everything, then you could create small and apply it to a larger creation of multiple people. So
right,
they
like
use
communal resourcing.
Yeah, they use both of that. People could borrow your creations to build bigger ones. And some people were able to invent their own, which were the beasts and the Kyclops. Like, you saw actual full functional beings come from people's ideas. So I don't know. It was a nice little snapshot of a maritime culture, of ancient culture. And then, so that's why that hologram is there, because it's part of that storage facility concept. Those were recordings of the faction that directly opposed the convocation after the summoning of Zodiark. And I mean, there's some deep, deep Oh my goodness, that whole conversation blew me out of the water.
Yeah, you like, learn about there being, is it another, the previous Elidibus sacrificed himself? So we've actually got a new one, aka you, so that makes sense. The guy before seemed like a pretty stand-up guy, but you know, like they've really painted you to be some kind of jerk in this expansion.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that whole thing, yeah. So yeah, we learned that Elidibus, the current Elidibus isn't the same Elidibus. So we don't even, we honestly don't even know who Elidibus is. Like, we went to Anamnesis for answers and got more questions because
we did not get a whole lot of info.
It's like, all right, let's find out answers about the Asians. Oh, guess what? Big Bad's not Big Bad. Wait, what? Like, okay, so what is he? And you don't know. Like, you genuinely don't know. Then you learn the name of the Heart of Heidelin is Vinah. Now, this part is really big because for those that don't know, Vinah is actually one of the antagonists of Final Fantasy XII.
Oh.
And so, minor spoiler here, and I apologize if anyone's been trying to get into 12 and they haven't had a chance. This is more so the tie-in to the plot of 14, so bear with me, I apologize. Cut it off at this point if you don't want to hear. But the way it works is that the Arcadian Empire in Final Fantasy XII was being spurred forward by Vinah because Vinah wanted to work towards the freedom of humanity. Because their species, the Kuria, have been controlling humans since the dawn of time, right? They've been like pushing their actions towards certain developments and stuff like that. And Vinah's like, no, screw this. They need to be able to make their own decisions, and helped push an empire to do that, to basically destroy all sources of the Kuria's powers, using the empire as like, because the thing is, they're like transient beings, so they can't really manifest in the real world, and they have to possess people and use them to do stuff. So yeah, Vinah is a big rebel against the Kurians and uses the empire to achieve that goal. But everyone, all the mortals get caught up in that war. And that's basically one of the core points of Final Fantasy XII is fighting Vinah, making sure Vinah doesn't destroy humanity in the process of trying to free them, which is really, really interesting concepts tying into Vinah being the heart of Heidelin. Because if Heidelin is supposed to be this all-encompassing, loving goddess, this mother crystal, why is her heart a rebel? You know? Why is her heart the direct opposition to the convocation? Not to mention that Vinah even made sure to correct people in feeling that the convocation are bad people, basically saying that the convocation is doing their best.
No worries, fam.
Yeah, they're all trying to do their best to protect the planet. It's just some of it's not as great as others, but they're all trying. And Vinah acknowledged that, so that's why they decided to become the Heart of Heidelin, because darkness needed a control. Darkness needed a kind of like needed a like
reins there.
Yeah, needed reins, and that's why they decided to become the light to contain the darkness. And it's like, oh my goodness, like all of this information. I mean, it helps give you.
But it also doesn't.
Yeah, it's so interesting how it's like helpful and not helpful at the same time. Because now, I mean, now everyone's like, who's Vinah? Who's Vinah? Vinah's from 12. Like, if you want to know about Vinah, go look up the story on 12. And you'll kind of see why that worries me as following the story. Because I'm like, why is this like literal freedom fighter the heart of Heidelin? Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's curious. And then everyone's been alluding to the point that Vinah says about being able to choose their own form. So everyone says that that's Minfilia. I don't know where I'm at with that decision yet.
No.
I'm not going to go as far as to say that Minfilia and Vinah are the same person, but I know some people do believe that. So, you know, I can't say for or against. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in regard to that.
Minfilia is usually posited as being the voice of Heidelin as opposed to her heart.
Well, and the thing is, she didn't become the word of the mother until after Realm Reborn.
Right. You know?
So thinking that she was originally a fragment of the heart or whatever, like it really puts her in a position that makes it look like she didn't get to make that choice. And that's the I feel like that's not fair to Minfilia, the character, because Minfilia decided. Like, she had a choice. She was told, she received the voice of Hylan telling her to go into the flow. She could have said no. And then she would have been with us. But she decided to follow that directive, go into the flow, was stuck into the sea. She couldn't move. Like, the entire time, she couldn't move. She was stuck in the sea, torn between life and non-life. And Hylan plucks her up and is like, hey, you're going to be my body now. Like, that's not a nice thing, you know? That's not
fun. I hate Minfilia, but Hylan definitely did her dirty. Like,
and that's why, if you look at the patch art, Hylan is chaining her.
Right.
In 3.2. So there's a significant amount of implication that Hylan took advantage of her over...
Yeah, and isn't quite as good as everybody thinks she is.
Yeah, over the whole concept of them being one and the same. I think she was actually used. So that's... Which, I mean, then brings up the question of what are we doing? But that's another story. Yeah, you know, always...
Girl!
See, that's the thing. Anytime Hylan comes up, I'm always like, if this is the case with Hylan, what are we doing? And it hits every time. I'm just like, like... It's crazy. Right,
so what happens after we get, like, the data repository? I mean, I know Ystola, like, tries to use it again, and we don't get to, and she's just like, well, I guess I have to figure out a way to get this damn thing working again.
Yeah, she plans to stay behind and do the research. I mean, good for her, because I wanted to stay behind and do the research. I'm glad she chose, because I would have not moved. I'm like, I'm not going. They're like, you're the Warrior of Darkness. You have to leave. I'm like, no! Give me the vision again! I need to see this, and I need to analyze it. Like, I honestly feel like I would be a terrible Warrior of Light because the amount of lore that I'd have access to as a hero of the world. Don't even get me started. Like,
kind of like that picture you posted on Twitter of you in the library. You would be there for years.
Mm-hmm. Forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But so you end up going back to the Crystarium because you have to, like, you know, basically just allude to the discovery. You got to explain to the Crystal Arc what's going on.
Right.
And you head back, and
there's some drama going on.
Yeah, people are getting angry. Essentially not angry, more so impatient. They're like, Ardbert's telling me I could be a Warrior Light. I'm about to leave now. And everyone's like, no, you can't leave. You have a job.
Like, you guys literally have jobs. Like, you all
contribute. And so you have to understand what's really important. The reason why they brought that up is because the Crystarium is built on the backs of every single individual's contribution.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Crystarium would have not survived if it wasn't for this contribution. And now the people who contributed to the growth of the Crystarium, which is only 100 years old, and that's baby time, you know, when it comes to nations.
That's we're baby talking history.
About, yeah, like, most of our states are about 200, 300 years old. Crystarium is only 100 years old. And everyone that helped build it from those roots, or at least their descendants, are starting to bounce now. And that's kind of dangerous as far as an economic perspective.
Yeah, a collapse is, like, imminent. Oh, yeah. Too many people leave.
Imminent. Like, they're scared of, you know, danger. They're scared of being taken over. They're scared of so many things. So they're like, please don't leave. Let's figure something out. But the problem is, the words of Ardbert had inspired them so much they couldn't take that as an answer. They're like, I have to go. I have to do good because that's what the Warrior of Darkness would do. And you're like, crap.
Well,
you're like, what really did I do? Them, what you? Did I do? What did I create? And it's intense because, you know, like the fight, you know, they're saying we have to do this. And you're in your heart, you're like, you're right. You're right. You have to be the hero. You have to decide to do what is right to save this world. But you have a job too, man. Like, you know, like you're trying to help them realize, and it's just it's futile because everybody's so animated, and then it happens.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
The star shower, everyone sees it, and everyone in the Crystarium hears the voice of Hylan.
The voice of Hylan.
Yeah, like, the voice.
In quotations.
The phrase that we have heard since we've started this game, you know, like, I mean, and the thing is, you probably haven't heard this words in a while.
Yeah, HFT.
Because when was the last time she said that to you? HFT
like law
3.2. Yeah, I think I can go back to the anti-tower. The anti-tower is when she was like, hear, think, feel, and then you get pulled into the sea. But like, yeah. I mean, you haven't heard that phrasing since the beginning of the game. Since
thank God she stopped calling us.
I know she stopped calling you, but then you find out, oh my goodness, then you find out that apparently she perpetually calls people.
All the
like
time.
She's been saying that repeatedly since forever, and the only reason why people can hear it is because a picture, like if they see any sort of star shower effect. So that's the thing. First of all, that's the thing. The star shower was an illusion, right? That Elidus created. It's fake. Elidus creates this image of the star shower. This image stirs the soul to remember Amaroth and the final days. And as you remember Amaroth, that's when you hear Heidelin. She's on a repeat. She's on the endless loop of hear, think, feel, hear, think, feel. Yeah. She does that over and over again. And you will only hear that if you've seen an image that brings the PTSD of Amaroth back to the fore. It's so much different to what we've ever considered in regards to just the echo, heroism. I mean, all right. So Twitter is currently on fire right now, trying to figure out what it genuinely means to be the Warrior of Light.
What does it mean?
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of people in active debate about the concept. If, you know, are we the chosen one, or does it really matter? Because now everyone in the Crystarium has the Echo. Like it's driving a lot of people to long, lengthy discussions on the subject. And I think
always thought it didn't matter because you get thrown into primal battles with like, what is it? 7 other people for like rights, and no, they all have the Echo. So it's like, I thought it didn't really matter all that much.
The big difference. So this is my take. I'll say this as, you know,
is it a spicy take?
Not spicy. I don't want to start stuff. Cause there
don't
are actually
wanna,
some,
don't want to start drama.
No, there's some actual debates on Twitter right now. So I want to avoid the fire, but hear me out. The difference lies in the fact that while everyone can and get the Echo pretty quickly and easily via these star showers, no one has 6 crystals of light like you do.
Oh, that is true.
And that's what defines you. Something or someone or some concept has allowed you to access the genuine power of the mother crystal.
The hack.
Differently than other people. Yeah, the key, the hack, whatever you wish to call it.
Now that makes sense. So I'm on board with this. Like that.
So you're still unique, but your powers are not. That's the thing. It's more so what you stand out. What makes you stand out is the fact that you have 6 crystals of light, and it's literally defining everything you've done up to the point of, you know, fighting Ultima Weapon and all that stuff. Like they still contain light, just not as much because they had to make that. The thing is, I don't think people really understand the potency of Ultima. That spell is Destruction Incarnate, and you were able to make a shield to block it. Like, not even the original heroes of Ivalice can make a shield to block it. They try in Orbon Monastery. If you do that fight, they make a shield, and it breaks. So you made a shield that didn't break. That's why your crystals are so weak now. But, like, I mean, you generate the sheer amount of force required to protect yourself from the Ultima spell is out of this world, and you're one of the only ones to do that. Completely
destroys the surrounding environment.
Oh yeah, The Praetorium is gone. Like all that's left is that platform, and it's just fire and hell. Like you did something there that no other person has managed since and or beforehand, right? So that's what sets you apart is your crystals of light.
But now we have a lot of other little babies that also think.
But now we have a bunch of echo hearing children that we have to figure out the best way to direct, because this isn't just one person. This isn't just a handful of people. This isn't just the Scions.
This is a nation.
This is an entire city state of people have been echo blessed.
One of them is going to do something dumb with it.
Mind you, Echo, they got this Echo moments after Ardbert told them they could be heroes. So they were already excited and planning to quit their job before they got the Echo.
And just put the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, he just genuinely put the nail in the coffin. He's taking the rug from underneath you and pulling hard. Because now you're not the only one that has this power, and the rest of them are too excited with it.
Yeah.
So what is that going to do to the world?
they're going to start running with scissors and everything.
That's a perfect example. Everyone's running with scissors right now, and you're the only one that's been holding, walking with scissors for.
Yeah, you're an adult now, and you need to.
You've been doing this for a very long time now. Your experience, you know, you've saved people, you've fought wars, you've killed gods, but now you're surrounded by everyone just like you, and they don't have any of the experience that you have, and they want to be heroes. So it's like, oh no, you know, like,
but you have to guide them in such a way that doesn't necessarily directly conflict with Odbert, which is the tricky thing about this move, which is going to be tricky moving forward.
You don't want
to
break the morale, right? You don't want to make them depressed.
You can't turn around and look at this guy and say, hey, by the way, this guy is a complete and total jerk and he's playing all of you because
he's a corpse and he's not real. Like, you can't say any of that.
They're going to turn around and they're going to destroy you, basically. Like, they're going to uprise against you and possibly the Exarch, and you don't want to disturb that.
Because you become the point of contention. You kill genuine motivation by trying to tell the truth, and that's the worst part of it. You're tongue-tied because you don't want to ruin their lives.
And like he walks up all smug and it's like, okay.
Check? He's playing chess and he just went check on us. Like,
right.
He's got one move left to knock out the king, and we still don't know what that is. And
Everybody's discussing it afterwards, they're so frustrated. Like, yeah, we can see what he's doing and he's being a pain in the backside, but we can't really do anything about it right now.
Yeah, he's called check on us. So what are we going to do? That's our next question. And it was the nice send off was being able to see those two guards again. And so I actually asked around to check. Apparently, based on your choice of city state affects the quote that you get to give.
Really?
Yeah. So because I started in Uldah, I gave Raoban's quote to the two guards. It was like a victory belongs to the bold, you know, that right. I literally quoted Raoban to them. And I think if you did Gridania, you quote Connie Senna. And if you did Limsa Laments, you'd quote the Admiral. So right. I thought that was really nice. Once again, it's the whole Echo thing. He's putting nostalgia on you again, being able to send off. You're like, you essentially 5.2 and 2.0, the beginning of 2.0, are almost synonymous because a lot of what's going on happened in the first 15 quests, like first 15 levels of Final Fantasy 14, but is now happening all around you. Everyone around you is experiencing
all over again.
They're Realm Reborn, you know, like. They all just started the counts on Final Fantasy around you. And you're the guy that's been playing since, you know, 1.0. And you're like, what? Like, all these noobs, you know, running around you with new accounts. So pretty cool. I'm excited, but terrified. I know for a fact, Lidibus has called check on us and we need to figure out what that is. And we don't have information to do so. We don't know what happened back then. And we don't even know who he is. So, yeah, 5.3 is going to be wild.
Almost as terrifying as, like, the cutscene that comes afterwards.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. Didn't like that. Don't like that. Bad touch. Don't like it.
Oh, okay. So, for a very long time, when I saw that part in the trailer, I was freaking out because for a while, I thought Xenos made it to the first.
Yeah, like, why are you here, bro? Go home.
I was like, my lord, like, what are you doing here? You know, I don't want you here. I know you're back, but stay on the source. Get stuck in the rift, something. Don't just teleport. Don't do that. You know what I mean? And I have no context, but that's what I'm. And that's the thing. Yeah. Square Enix, the dev team loves to get red herrings.
With no context whatsoever, so you freak out.
No context cutscenes kill you. They kill the community because all of us are like, why? And then when we finally get the answer, it's nothing like we thought. So we're like, oh.
Well, he's just kind of sat there like, well, oh, I had that dream again. It's just like, why are you dreaming about that?
A dream he's been having since childhood, mind you. Okay, yeah. So this, now, I'm gonna pull the whole, and real quick, how much time do we have? I don't want to.
We've been over for a while. We should be ending.
We should be ending. Well, no,
this is the last part. So I'll
actually, just... there's one other part after this, too.
speed run, guys. Yep, speed run.
Okay. Go.
So Xenos, right? Everyone says Xenos is a terrible villain. There is a lot of discussion on Twitter about how he's bad character, bad design, bad everything. No, everyone hates him, right? Yeah, me too. But
that's
here's the
terrible
thing.
Take.
Here's the thing. This small cutscene provides so much context into the problem that is Xenos, the overall conundrum that is Xenos, because he's been dreaming about Amaranth since a child.
He's been plagued with this since he was tiny. Like, imagine having to deal with that as a kid. Like,
does anyone remember when they first ran Amaranth? Like, when you first run Amaranth and you're seeing those monsters for the first time, you're seeing the people die around you and explode
running
around
away,
you.
Screaming.
Running away, screaming. Just the whole context of Amaranth. Like, you remember the Bellwether. You remember the first Doom. All those monsters that attacked you, right? Imagine seeing that as a child and having zero context. Like, no one introduced you to it. No one introduced you to it. No one is telling you, hey, this is the final days. You know, like, Emmett Selk was our tour guide. We see his voice in the map. You know, like, he literally is our guide through and through. But Xenos did not have that. And
no, he just had a deadbeat dad that ignored him. So, of course, that's going to make more problems.
A deadbeat dad that ignored him because his mother died to illness after giving birth to him and is forcing him to train with people that want him dead, which is part of the short story, by the way. Xenos actually has to protect himself while he's a child because an assassin is trying to kill him. Like,
it's all additional trauma for this.
Yeah, everything, so like, everything yeah. ever happened to Xenos. Everything that's ever happened to Xenos is just layers and layers of his madness.
And he's done.
Yeah, that's the only reason why he's killing so wantonly now, because everything up to this point has just been terrible for him, right?
Okay, what comes after that?
So man. And
Xenos' spiritual guide's like, oh, this dream. Tell me more about it.
This weird dude, like this little ukulele-looking dude, shows up and is like, "Hey, I've seen someone like you before. Who is you? New phone? Who dis? Could you maybe stop interfering, please? You sound like a meddling little bugger."
Yeah, it's crazy.
Don't put ideas in his head.
So the one thing that I wanted to point out, because it sounded like we were about to skip it, but it bothers me that you retire to the inn. And then as you retire to the inn, if the person you've done your class quest with in the first comes knocking on your door, I want to know what that was about, because that was something I was not expecting.
Yeah, me either. Like, it's cute, though. It's nice. Well, they can check up on you.
So it's a tie-in to the overall plot of role quests. So as you know, that you spent the opening act of 5.2 trying to vindicate the Warriors of Light, right? And only you know the true story because you have so much more experience with them than anyone else on the first, right? Each and every single role quest over time, you start sharing that identity
with someone else.
And this segment of the MSQ is those people coming back to you asking you what happened. They're like, they know this has something to do with the Warriors of Light. They know this has something to do with what you've told them about how the cardinal virtues are actually not villains. Mm-hmm. And I mean, each person handles that in their own way. You know, you got one who's a friend who's an actual friend. You know, role quests are amazing. But so they come to you to ask you what's going on. They need more information now because you were their primary source of unveiling the truth. And now they need more truth. And they each and every single one of you, one of those adventurers, they ask you and they ask if you need help. And it's just, it's just really nice because you're not alone in this, you know, for the first time, you have actual genuine friends checking up on you. They're like, hey, man, I saw what's going on in Exhedra with the star shower and all that. You mind explaining that? And then you explain, they're like, hey, you need a partner to help fight. And so no matter who you pick, I actually went and did all five of them. No matter who you pick, you basically tell them not to worry about it because you're worried for their safety.
Right.
Over your own. You say, hey, I got this. This is Ascian stuff. You don't need to get into it. Like, I already ruined your life telling you that the Warriors of Light were who they were. I'm not going to go any further. You're going to be held at this point. And like, I mean, that's got to be rough for the Warrior of Light to do that, to be able to like, thank you so much for being there for me. Thank you for wanting to help. But no, you're not allowed to help me with this because this is Ascian stuff and I'm not letting you get involved. Like,
I mean, maybe they ignore you though. I hope they ignore you.
Yeah. I hope they do. I hope they come back and they're like, hey, remember that time I asked you for help? I wasn't kidding. And you're like, crap. You know, or something to that effect.
Or you get into dire straits and like your NPC shows up like, what up? I see you're in a sticky situation.
And it's kind of like the end of Realm Reborn.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. No, but yeah, you can choose. So just to let the listeners know, you can go back in the inn and rewatch this cutscene and choose someone else. So if you feel unsatisfied with your choice, go ahead and do that. If you complete all five role quests, then you get access to all five, and definitely worth watching the fifth one. Highly recommended. So
okay.
That concludes this, doesn't it? I think we've done everything.
That is everything for 5.2. Okay. That is MSQ. That's MSQ for 5.2. We still haven't gotten the Ruby weapon, so
you know what your homework is now, Enki.
Oh my god, if I haven't done it by next week, just drag me on Twitter. Like, I will be able to
beat
do it.
The hardest, I beat the hardest, I beat the...
Actually, if anybody paid attention to the tweet I posted this morning, next week we're actually going to be doing, the morning of recording this, I should say, I posted that hint that we'd be doing a Beyond Eorzea talk.
Yes, girl.
So please look forward to that for next week, guys, because it's going to be a fun little roller coaster that we're going to try out.
Oh, yes.
We have quite a few of those Beyond Eorzeas, thanks to our lovely Enki here.
Well, I put word on paper, I English good.
That's okay. I don't English good. Maybe that's why I like to hug the walls and kiss the floors.
I tank them. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes all the sense.
But anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. We hope you guys are staying safe in these weird times of chaos and stuff, even though it's not really chaos. It's just people are blowing it up.
Yeah, wash your hands. Don't panic by toilet paper. There's no need to.
Assuming you can get toilet paper.
Oh, right.
But please stay safe, guys. If anything, make yourself a nice home-cooked meal. Wash your hands. And we will catch you guys next week. But until then, guys, we wish you all a wonderful eve.
Bye.
Bye.
Aetherstream is part of Aetherflow Media, a community-based project with a focus on Final Fantasy XIV. Aside from this podcast, we produce web content and our magazine, Aetherflow. And if you like what you see and hear, consider joining our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/aetherflowmedia. All funds go towards providing you with the best possible content that we can create.